It's time for the Talent Talk Radio Show, brought to you by People G2, a nationwide leader in background checks and employment screening solutions. People G2 gives their clients access to the best human capital management and due diligence tools available. They are dedicated to helping their clients with all of their people-related decisions. To learn more, go to www.peopleg2.com. Talent Talk centers on the topics of talent recruitment and management, leadership development, company culture, and employee engagement. These are all timely topics for CEOs, entrepreneurs, HR professionals, and business leaders. We hope that as you tune in to listen each week, whether to the live broadcast or to the podcast on iTunes or iHeartRadio, that you hear something you can take away that will help you grow and impact your career in a positive way. And now, here's the host of the Talent Talk Radio Show, the founder and CEO of People G2, Chris Dyer.
Good afternoon, and thank you for tuning in here to Talent Talk. Excited to have two fantastic guests on today. And we're just going to focus in on talent, what makes a talented person, and of course, what are these experts doing with their talent here in 2020? You know, we really love to have, I love to have great conversations with people that are out there doing this work every day, finding out what's making them tick. What are they thinking about? What wonderful things are happening? What can we think about doing more of that they might be doing? And what can we even be thinking about trying to avoid? What are they worried about? And where some of our risks might be. We've really been privileged to have so many wonderful conversations. And that's really what this is about, is to have a conversation with leaders out there that are sort of in the trenches doing the work. And hopefully give you some glimpse into, again, what they're thinking about and what they're doing. There's been so many great stories over the years since we've started this show, this live radio show, which has turned into a podcast. I put a lot of those stories in my first book, bestseller called The Power of Company Culture. Feel free to check that out wherever you buy your books online. But, you know, it's really inspired by so many of the fantastic stories, and we love to hear those stories and find out, you know, maybe how a company overcame a particular issue that you might be having today in your company. Talent Talk is live every Tuesday, 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. You can always tune in live, but most of you access us via the podcast later on, which you can find on iTunes or Stitcher or iHeart or wherever you want to look for your podcast. You can find us there. Big thank you to everyone who's following the show. And those we've about 10,000 people a day tuning into one of our shows and listening and being hopefully inspired and learning something new. If you have a question, a suggestion, maybe you want to interact with our guests or myself today, my social media maven, Sarah Blake, is actively putting all of the best bits of information, maybe links to the companies, the books and quotes and whatever else we might be talking about on our live feed on at People G2. So if you follow People G2, you'll see it all. You can also follow the hashtag Talent Talk, all one word, and all of that will just start magically appearing. If you're listening after the fact, no problem. You can go back and find all of those by looking at that hashtag or at People G2. And you know, from time to time, we actually get a lot of people that will come in even days, weeks, months later and interact and ask questions about what we talked about. So we love that kind of interaction. So please keep it coming. All right, my guests today include Derek Waters. He's the Regional Vice President of Operations at a little company you might know called UPS. And then we'll bring in, after the commercial break, Ted Malley, CCO of Ceridian, another company you might have heard of. But we'll go ahead and bring him in later. But let's get to my first guest, Derek Waters. Derek, welcome to the show today.
Hey, Chris. Thanks a lot. I'm very happy to be here today.
Well, I'm happy to have you here. And maybe you could tell everyone a little bit about yourself. You know, what's important for us to know in the context of this for this conversation today. Maybe kind of get everyone up to speed of who you are and what you do.
All right, thanks a lot. Yes, as Chris mentioned, I'm the Vice President of Operations for the Western U.S. for UPS. And really, what we do is oversee the day-to-day operations for small package, which is the little brown vehicles that you all see on the streets on a daily basis. Making sure that we service our customers and provide the services that each of you have grown to expect from us on a daily basis, and getting your packages from point A to point B, and making sure that we do it as efficiently and cost-effectively as possible. That's kind of it in a nutshell, Chris, what I do on a day-to-day basis.
So, you know, UPS has a bit of a reputation and has certainly if anyone out there pays attention to talent, I mean, you guys hire very specific people who get a very specific job done. Obviously, not everyone drives a truck, but, you know, good portion of your workforce does, is out there doing that key work that we see every day and are impacted by every day. Are there key areas that you kind of focus on when either looking for new team members or developing team members? What does that look like?
Well, absolutely. When you come to the operations side, a lot of it is based off of engineering, and probably the most familiar part of the engineering is industrial engineering, where you're really looking for efficiency, making sure that you got the best job set up and the greatest opportunity to do it at the greatest cost and as quickly and as efficient as possible. But really, as we start to go through that piece, we're really looking at the engineering side, and then also, how do you think from a business standpoint as we kind of go in, whether it be with a university or whether we're recruiting people that already have experience in the workforce? So it really is kind of geared around the engineering piece, and you may have heard in years past, you know, a lot of times that UPS is an engineering company that delivers packages.
Right, absolutely. So, you know, I guess, are there any particular qualities or maybe personality traits or things that you really look for in new members as they come in to possibly join your team?
Oh, definitely. Really, it's more of a blue-collar type of environment that we look for. So really what we look for is individuals or personality traits is people that can get along and work very closely with others. Because, you know, everything depends upon one spoke, I guess the best way to look at it is one spoke depends upon the other one for us to be successful. So we really look for people that has an outgoing personality, has the ability to be able to connect with people in the workforce, as well as has the ability to be able to connect with our customers. But at that same time, having that personality, but also probably, I guess the best way to put it, mathematically inclined, and not to be afraid to deal with challenges when it comes to numbers and calculations for how to do certain things. But the biggest piece is the personality, from a personality standpoint, is being able to connect with others. And then at the same time, be very focused in what you're going about to get the job done. But at the same time, having that ability to be understanding and to be able to listen. Definitely have to be able to listen to others' inputs, because as you stated, a large portion of our workforce are drivers. And coming straight out of college or coming from other companies, you may not have had the opportunity to be a driver or a delivery person.
Right. And you've mentioned now a couple of times sort of this technical side or even math side that I hadn't even thought of as being maybe something that might be valuable to your organization above and beyond what, you know, maybe a typical organization might be looking for. I guess it kind of gets into the really individual particulars about who fits and who doesn't, especially inside of your unique company culture. Are there other things that you look for in looking for fit into your culture?
Definitely. I think everyone that's ever seen a UPS driver know that you have to be hardworking. And so, you know, we look for a person that is not afraid of hard work. Because in a lot of cases, you're going to need to be able to, even if you're not delivering packages, be able to get on the car, ride with a driver, or go in and look at our inside operations and to evaluate what it takes for us to be able to get the packages through the facility or delivered to the customer. So other things that I would say that we look for outside of hardworking, outside of the technical side, is and the outgoing personality, it is really the ability, and I said it a minute ago, but to go into more detail, the ability to listen. You really have to, like, sit back, evaluate what each individual tells you is the challenging points within UPS with a large logistics company, and then being able to go back and evaluate that information that you've heard and then apply it to be able to solve the problems that we're faced with on a daily basis. So I would tell you that you definitely have to be able to demonstrate the ability to listen and then the ability to follow up and come through on the things that you've heard or the challenges that you see that we're facing going forward.
So, you know, in my book, The Power of Company Culture, one of the pillars, one of the kind of seven things that I've identified as being really it helps companies be the best, right? If you have the greatest cultures, if we were to take the top 10 or the top 20 or even the top 100 companies in the world. I mean, listening is one of those things that they do really, really well and is a super important part of their culture. So it's just, I'm absolutely loving kind of hearing you reiterate that and talk about this, that it's such an important part of your organization. Certainly that UPS would be recognized as having a great culture. And really, it's very understandable. People kind of can feel, I mean, you can feel certain organizations, people. I mean, when you go on a Southwest flight, you can kind of feel that culture. And I think you have that interaction with people that work for UPS as well. So if we look at, you know, your company and we look at companies across the globe, where do you kind of rank culture as far as the importance? I mean, obviously, we're going to sell something. We're going to sell location is another factor. Culture is another factor. Where do you sort of put culture in the grand scheme of things as far as importance for an organization to be successful?
Based off of me being at UPS for 32 years, I would tell you that it is right at the top of the list. I won't say it's number one, but I would tell you it's absolutely in your top three. And really the reason I say that is at UPS, we're very culture-driven. You know, we have a specific way how we do almost everything that we do on a daily basis. You know, and as you kind of go through that piece, you know, people have to have the ability to fit into the culture. And one of the things that I truly believe in, you know, you can have a great strategy, but the culture will eat that strategy on a daily basis if you don't understand the culture you're working in and how to communicate that strategy to the people within that culture for them to understand it and to accept it. So culture is at the very top, in my opinion. You have to, first of all, understand what the culture is. And then you have to be able to communicate whatever you're trying to accomplish through your organization so that it fits into that culture and so that the people, the members of that culture accept it and then embrace it and move forward with it.
Right. And culture is a big part about how do we celebrate when we win? How do we deal with adversity when things are challenging? You know, what are sort of the norms and the rules and the ways in which we get things done? So maybe you could talk a little bit about how do your team members, how do your employees really engage or how do they facilitate maybe a particularly challenging situation? Is there sort of a blueprint or an expectation of how they do that?
I wouldn't say it's a blueprint on how you do it. You know, I think it really depends on the individual and really how you're like leading your team, right? But one of the things I would tell you that, you know, as you kind of go through that piece, when you're faced with a challenging portion, the first thing is about having great communication with it. And that's one of the things I would say at UPS. When we are faced with a challenge, we do a great job of communicating it out so that everyone gets a good feeling, understanding for what it takes and what we're looking to achieve to be able to get out of that challenging situation. And based off of having great communication and everyone from the floor or the bottom up, understanding what that challenge is, it gives us the greatest opportunity to be able to work our way out of that challenge. So, you know, one of the things that I would absolutely say, Chris, and I would agree with you 100%, is that as you're going through that process and you're trying to get through it, you got to communicate it. And then again, you got to go back to where everyone is listening, what's taking place. And then as we kind of work through that process is responding and getting everyone's buy-in. So communication will be a huge piece of that. And making sure that everyone understands where we are and where we're trying to get to be able to work your way out of a challenging situation. But I definitely wouldn't say that there's a blueprint that's written. I think when you start to get to that point to where you're writing a blueprint and saying this is the way you have to do it every time, you run the risk of not allowing everyone to be a part of that solution, and you reduce your opportunity to find the best opportunity or reduce your opportunity to find the best way to get out of a challenging situation.
Yeah, and certainly being too dogmatic, too specific about that blueprint, I would definitely agree with you. But, you know, sometimes a general blueprint, I think you've sort of laid that out, right? Being high communication, listening, I mean, that's a really good start in dealing with any challenge. It's hard for people to come up with great ideas and make great suggestions if they don't have all the information that everybody else has. And so if we're not communicating that and what we know, you can't expect, you know, the person sitting next to you or another leader who's being asked to help to be even be able to fathom or contribute in a positive way if we're not communicating. So it's a great reminder and a great lesson there. You know, one of the things that I've always been blessed with in my organizations are these sort of call them informal leaders, right? You have your designated leaders, people with a certain title, you know, a V or a C in there or whatever. And we expect them to provide leadership day in and day out. But we have these other people that provide leaders. We also kind of might call them a part-time leader. They might be leading a team. They might be leading a small group. They might just be the kind of person that is a leader and willing to stand up from time to time. How important is that, maybe in general and specifically inside your organizations, to having those types of people?
I think it's huge. You know, one of the things when you start to think about those informal leaders is that they're the people that make the places, from my experience, it makes things take place and for the operations or functions or departments to work every day and to make the day-to-day operations a necessity or a task to make sure that they get done on a daily basis. You know, if you're dependent upon a manager or a supervisor or whoever, director, making sure those things happen every day, it's no way that they can touch everybody in their department. They need someone that says, hey, you know what? I know exactly what needs to happen, and then I'm going to take my spheres of influence or my influence and influence the people that are around me to ensure that we do the best job and get the best performance possible. So, you know, those people are as important as any supervisor or any person that's walking around with the title because they make sure that the little things get done. They make sure that you don't miss the small things that is going to get recognized and possibly cause a much bigger problem to arise later on or further down the road. So I would absolutely say that, you know, informal leaders are worth their weight in gold because they make sure the little things get taken care of.
Yeah, and you know, it can often be kind of hard to figure out how to best utilize these people. I think sometimes organizations make a mistake of looking at someone who's a part-time or informal leader and then trying to immediately give them full leadership capabilities to promote them up. And that may not be where that person is. They may not be quite ready to be a leader full-time. They may be happy to step up when the time is right and then step back into something more consistent and regular that it's not in a leadership position. Do you see that dynamic happening sometimes? And how do you think we best utilize those types of people?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely have seen that. You know, one of the things I would say is one of the big things that I think has supported me throughout my career and that I think has helped me, not by no means saying that I never made that mistake that you just spoke to of putting someone in a position just because I saw what they did as an informal leader. But I think it's important to get to know your people, and I've learned that from experience. Get to know them and get to know exactly what they're wanting and what they're looking to accomplish. And that comes from having a more personal conversation with people. As you see those informal leaders and you identify an informal leader, you know, Chris, it's about going back, talking to them, and finding out exactly what they want. And I think the best way to utilize them is to find out what people want. Because when people are doing what they want to do and what they enjoy doing, that's when they do the best job for you. That's when they provide the best service. So it's all about getting to know them, find out what they're looking to accomplish. If they say, hey, you know, right now I don't really want to be in that formal leadership role, I want to stay where I'm at, you let them stay there. And you continue to find out what they want to accept as leadership from an informal standpoint. And then if they ever change their mind and want to go forward, you leave that door open for them to feel comfortable to come back and let you know that. And then you have the ability to move forward. But that way you get the opportunity to take advantage of what they want to accomplish. Because, again, to a point that I think is critical in any business that you're in is knowing what the person wants. And when you give a person the opportunity to do what they like to do and what they enjoy doing and they want to do, they will absolutely put the best foot forward and give you 100%.
Yeah, definitely. And this sort of also gets into, you know, how do we develop people? Because some of those people could be developed long term into more significant leaders, and some of them need to be developed in a different way that they may not want to be in charge of an entire division or a group or whatever it may be, despite their leadership potentials. I guess, so what are your thoughts on self-development? I mean, do you kind of expect everyone to be constantly trying to develop themselves in some positive way? Do you offer, you know, opportunities but leave it up to them? How do you approach that inside of UPS?
You know, a couple of things. When you start to think about the self-development, you know, I kind of always use myself as an example, and I talk to people or as I mentor different individuals, or whether it be someone that's working directly for me that we're trying to develop. I think that if you meet that person, going back to the point that we made a few minutes ago, that wants to become a formal leader, you know, that you start to talk to them about developing their own personal plan for how they want to get to each level that they want to achieve. You know, and absolutely, I think that you should always be educating yourself. That doesn't mean formal education where you're necessarily going to a university or you're taking some certification, but that could be where you're reading. And I always tell people, it doesn't always have to be about some leadership book or something along those lines. But as long as you're reading and keeping your mind to where it's developing and learning new things and getting a better understanding for what's taking place, whether it's a fiction or a nonfiction book, it gives you an opportunity to think and broaden your thought process. And I think that's huge as people start to think about from a diversification standpoint. The more that they understand, the more that they broaden their thought, their mind, the greater opportunity they're going to have to be able to support and bring a different thought pattern to certain companies. And that goes back to the first conversation we was having a little bit earlier on from a culture standpoint. That gives you a chance to broaden that culture, to expand upon what's taking place, because as each generation comes into a company, it's about them. They're going to bring something different to the table than what we brought in the late 80s and the early 90s when I came into the workforce. So, again, from a self-development standpoint, I think it's important that every person continues to develop themselves. But what, it depends on what type of development plan that I'm looking for them to have, whether they say that they want to continue to be an informal leader or whether they say, hey, you know, I really want to become a supervisor. I really want to become a manager. Then we start to get much more specific on their plan and then where they have their plans laid out by year for what they want to accomplish and where they want to go, even down to the timeline to when they want to achieve each milestone along that path that they have set up for themselves for where they want to get to as their final destination.
Well, it sounds like you've thought about a lot of this, and I'm sure you probably are someone who likes to learn and grow yourself. So I'm wondering, is there a book you're reading right now or one that you typically suggest people check out?
Yes, I'll give you one that I typically tell people to take a look at and to check out, and that's Monday Morning Leadership. And the reason I picked that book is someone introduced me to it probably about 9 years ago. And it's a short read. It's not like it's a long read or it's a hard read. But it focuses in on a couple of key things. And one of the things is about the main things. And the reason I bring that up is, you know, one of the things I got into a habit of doing is like each month, what are my main things? What do I want to accomplish this month to be sure that I stay on task and I continue to stay focused with what I'm trying to achieve and what I want my team to achieve? So that would be one that I would definitely say. And then the another piece that it touches on is about making sure you hire the right people. You know, it's important that, you know, as a leader, you absolutely are not going to have all the right answers or all of the answers. But if you hire the right people, you have the right people around you, and you have a strong team, that develops, gives you the greatest opportunity for you to continue to move forward as an individual and also to make sure that your company continues to move forward. And the progress as they kind of go down the road. So I would absolutely tell anyone that's looking for a good quick read, it's about 100 to 120 pages, you know, they check out Monday Morning Leadership. It definitely, I recommend it to my friends, and I have friends that call me from different industries that I went to college with, and they say, hey, what book would you recommend? I always push them to this book if they haven't already read it.
Well, it sounds like a great book for us to check out, and I'm sure our listeners will enjoy reading it. You know, we're at the end here. I want to make sure we give an opportunity. You know, how can people find out more about you? What's the best way for them, maybe considering a career with UPS? What's the best way for them to find out more, get a hold of you or the company, whatever you think is appropriate?
All right. So the best way to get a hold of me would be through LinkedIn, and it's pretty simple to look me up. They can just look for Derek Waters. That's the easiest way to get a hold of me. From a company standpoint, if they're looking for a career, you know, I would say, you know, go to upsjobs.com and look to see what's available out there. We offer jobs in pretty much every curriculum that is across the that you can study coming out of college. We're global, we're worldwide, and it's a great place to grow and a great place to go up the corporate ladder because we do a lot of promotions from within.
Well, Derek, thank you so much for being a part of the show today, sharing all of your fantastic insights. Hopefully we can have you come back at some point and tell us about the next. You've been there 32 years, so I'll expect the next time I talk to you, you'll probably still be there. But we'll be excited to hear an update on everything that's going on with you.
Hey, Chris, thank you for having me today, and I truly enjoyed it.
All right, I'm going to take a quick commercial break and come right back with my second guest, Ted Malley.
Imagine buying a newspaper and discovering that the news you're reading is 6 months old. There isn't much that stays the same for 6 months. And the same thing goes for background checks. In a time when so much outdated information is being passed around, it's good to know that People G2 offers something different. At People G2, we provide today's intelligence, not yesterday's news. Our value-added approach offers you a fully FCRA-compliant solution that includes up-to-the-minute information. By combining industry-leading technology with old-school human investigation, People G2 is able to give you information that is accurate right now, delivered quickly through our online system or integrated with your HR system. So ask yourself, are you comfortable working with old news, or are you ready for a different kind of background check company? Visit PeopleG2.com or call 800-630-2880. That's 800-630-2880 or PeopleG2.com.
Welcome back to the Talent Talk Radio Show. In case you missed my first guest, Derek Waters of UPS, you can listen to his interview and this one coming up. It'll be on our Turn Into a Podcast. You can find it on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you find your podcast. We should be there under Talent Talk. So don't forget, you can also go to talenttalkradio.com and you can subscribe there as well and always pick up all the episodes. I think that's through Podbean, but all the episodes are listed there as well. It's a great resource. So follow us again at PeopleG2. Follow that hashtag Talent Talk. We're live tweeting right now all of the best bits of wisdom, advice, books, links, everything that's talked about sort of goes out there. And in case you don't have a pen or maybe listening in the car, you can go grab it there. So let's go ahead and get to my next guest, Ted Malley. He's the CCO of Ceridian. Ted, welcome to the show today.
Hey, thanks, Chris. Great to be here.
Well, I'm glad to have you. And why don't you tell everyone a little bit about yourself? What's important for us to know in our conversation today? You know, who you are and what you do over there at Ceridian.
Sure. And again, thanks for having me. I love your podcast. You guys talk about great topics. So I'm the Chief Customer Officer of Ceridian HCM, and we're a worldwide global leader in cloud-based human capital management systems that do anything from HR, payroll, talent acquisition, background check services that we link to, talent development, all kinds of great stuff. And as the Chief Customer Officer, my job is to keep our customers happy, engaged in using the product, and to be there when they need us.
Well, that's fantastic. So I'm certainly being in that space, and we're sort of in a similar space as well. You know, the you're thinking about and really working on whether it's your own culture or helping your customers' cultures, for them to be right. So maybe you could talk about what you think culture is, what's the importance of it, to kind of start us framing this conversation.
Sure. And, you know, it's a little daunting, honestly, to talk to a guy who wrote a book on culture. but I think everyone has their own journey and experience. And so my smaller company was acquired by Ceridian back in 2015. And I was drawn to Ceridian because of the culture that I saw forming. And so, you know, what I've learned and lived in the past 5 years hence is that, you know, culture is everything. And I think we remember the great Peter Drucker quote where he once said, "Culture eats strategy for breakfast." And, you know, back then Ceridian was a private company. We've since grown and have IPO'd in 2018, and really all of that is attributable directly to our culture. And so it has created a common framework that we talk about our values. It's more than just a coffee mug or a mouse pad on the desk, but the senior leadership team is totally committed to the values and living them out and recognizing and rewarding people that exude those values. And also the culture of kind of being a bigger company globally of 5,000 people, how do you break that down and make the executive team approachable, transparent, where, you know, you can ask anybody any question? You know, in the older days, there used to be buildings where you could only go to certain floors, and if you did, you had to wear a suit and tie. And our culture nowadays is where you see our CEO, David Ossip, in a T-shirt, in jeans and very, very approachable and having town halls, and there are no sacred floors and doors that are kept locked. It's a very open and engaging culture. And so I think when you do that, it attracts talent. It creates an energy around a common purpose that people really want to give their extra discretionary effort towards. And I think if you do it right, you create an organization where that culture transcends individual leaders, where it kind of permeates itself because you're grooming future leaders to sort of carry the torch. And so, you know, I think you've seen it, and I think we've all seen it, where companies really succeed or fail based on their ability to create and maintain a great culture.
Well, you've mentioned some really great things that kind of go into that recipe of making a great culture. And often, I think some leaders, some organizations, they don't know how to do it, which I can understand that, but they don't also know or understand what are they going to get out of it, right? What's going to happen if they do the work and they make these things happen? What are they really going to get out of it? And that's often the first bridge to sort of cross with these people to get them to understand. And I think two of those things for me that I talk about is this, that people can trust, right? There's a level of trust, because without trust in the organization, if people don't believe what the management's saying, if they don't believe that they're going to be taken care of, there's not that trust, then you don't get their best work from them. And then also that second thing of empowerment, right? That people have the power to go and do the job you've hired them to do, and they're not going to be micromanaged to death or, you know, be sort of having that power constantly taken away from them where they feel hopeless and powerless. So you did a great job of framing some other important parts. Maybe you could talk a little bit about what does Ceridian do to ensure that there is trust? Obviously not having locked floors and things like that are important, but what else are you guys doing to deal with that trust factor and empowerment factor?
Yeah, I think a couple of things is, number one, the trust and empowerment factor starts with leadership modeling. And really, when I learned a lot of this, and I think we've all learned some of this by just being parents of our kids, where, you know, you give them a little bit of the reins, and then as they grow up and they show themselves accountable and responsible, you give them a little bit more. And then one day they're gone and out of the house, and I think making their own decisions. I think leadership in an organization is similar. So at Ceridian, you know, we give decision-making authority. We push it as far down in the organization as we possibly can. You still have your checks and balances, but you want to push those decisions. And then you also have to give your leaders and your growing and emerging leaders a chance to fail in really what amounts to be a fail-safe environment. So if you're going to make a mistake, you want to make it early. You want to correct it. But you don't necessarily fire somebody for making a mistake. You give them a framework and a boundary where they can, it's okay to make mistakes. And, you know, obviously you limit the kinds of mistakes by, you know, by level and authority, but you want to see them making mistakes and correcting quickly and never make the same mistake twice. And that's called growth or development. And I can't think of any better opportunity to learn, even in my career, when I've made a mistake and I've had a leader come to me and say, all right, Ted, let's think through what are the causal factors that cause you to make the decision this way. Maybe there's a couple things you didn't think about or maybe you consider next time, and you course correct and you move on. But how freeing it is and empowering for an organization when you have a coaching team, if you will, that allows for that. Again, within reason. I'm not saying everybody go long and everybody go nuts, but empowerment comes from being able to make mistakes but correct quickly and have a good coach around you and a coaching team that allows that. And I think over time, when you see that demonstrated consistency where there's a commitment to coaching, there's a commitment to freedom in doing that, that you absolutely will see people empowered, so they start treating the business as if it is their own because it is, and you've created that culture to let them do that.
So I, you know, often I have people talk to me about these certain companies or situations, places where people work, where engagement is very, very high, but maybe culture is very low. And typically, they're highly engaged because they're doing a job that they absolutely love. Like, maybe they're a teacher and they absolutely love teaching kids, although their school culture stinks. Or maybe they're working with animals or something, and they love what they do, but the organization itself kind of stinks. And they put up with that because they have a high level of engagement. I think for the rest of us who are sort of in a regular company, that we're not hiring people who are maybe doing something that it's so high levels of engagement, we have to make sure our culture is really in line and feeding and working, I guess, sort of hand in hand with that engagement story. Do you agree with me? Is that what you see inside of your organization, or do you see it some other way?
Yeah, well, I would say I mostly agree, but I would tend to see it where you see a great culture. It's hard to spot low engagement if the culture is truly authentic and people mm-hmm. are bought into it and they feel like they're connected to the overarching mission and purpose of the organization. I tend to see more often than not, although you've given a couple examples where it's not that way, I see culture and engagement tied hand in hand. Where there's high culture and a great culture, you will tend to see much higher engagement rates in organizations, and where the culture is not that great, people are disenfranchised, turnovers through the roof, nobody wants to be here. And generally, and especially I would say in the newer emergent workforce, the millennial workforce, the Gen X and Gen Zs, you're going to see a lot of that where they are starving for a connection to a greater purpose. And so the purpose of the organization, and a lot of this comes out in philanthropic purposes as well, and how they're giving back. They're much more interested in that, and that creates a longer term engagement. But I think it's hard to sustain high levels of engagement in a not so great culture. I think it's really hard to do over the long haul.
Sure. Well, being that you are really the top there of hearing what your clients are thinking about, what they're in keeping them happy and helping them. Maybe even start to think about those things that are coming that they need to be focused on. I wondered if you had some thoughts on what are some of your clients really seeing as sort of a challenge, especially around the gig economy.
Yeah, I guess just pivoting to that, you know, we work with employers of all shapes and sizes, you know, in the U.S. and globally, and the emerging topic by and large is this concept of the gig economy or alternative workforce. And even to the tune where if you read some of the reports out there, some of them are calling for an alternative workforce representing 50% of our total workforce by the year 2027. So here we are on the threshold of our new decade, and we're going to be 50% gig workers before the decade is over. What a dramatic shift. And so many companies, obviously out here in California, land of the Silicon Valley, and contingent workers and contract programmers where high tech is, that's pretty the norm. There are also a lot of companies that we're familiar with now, Uber, Lyft, et cetera, that have made entire business models on this notion of a contingent workforce. And as Ceridian, we've actually invested some research into this with our recent Future of Work report that we just released that showed over half of the organizations in North America plan to actually increase their engagement with the alternative workforce. So we're helping companies think through those challenges. What does it look like? What does that do to a payroll system when you have workers that want to get paid like today versus waiting until payday? And so we're investing heavily in technologies that allow us to create those on-demand pay scenarios. We even have a product we're releasing in the spring called the Dayforce Wallet, where some of that stuff gets transacted directly to a digital wallet in real time based on the hours that you've worked today. So you can literally, and it's not a payday loan, it's like you've earned this money, it's now in your digital wallet that's on your phone. And so those are the types of things that we're hearing our customer base and a lot of our employers noodle through. Out here in California, we just passed AB 5, Assembly Bill 5, which redefines contingent workers. So that has a lot of the employers out here in California sort of scrambling to rethink what that looks like going forward. And so it's a representation of the new workforce that has high skills, often going to the highest bidder, and desires work-life balance, hourly flexibility, and they're very, very skilled in their craft. And so that is more and more of the workforce that we're in as well. And so we're trying to stay ahead of that, study that carefully, and plan our company initiatives to embrace that and help our customer base win at that game.
You know, one of the things that I have worried about with the gig economy, there's certainly a lot of positives. I mean, allowing people to work when and where they want, when, as much or as little. I mean, it sort of gives people an opportunity to go in and make some extra money. There's a lot of good things about it if we can figure out some of the drawbacks. But one of the drawbacks is, are we potentially losing a set of people? If you look at people who are driving an Uber car, if they're doing a delivery, whatever this thing inside the gig economy might look like, are we missing out on great leaders? Are we missing out on the ability to develop people and help them, possibly achieve new things if our interaction with them is now completely transactional as opposed to in some other way? Do you think we're missing out on trying to develop these people as great leaders or as great employees in the long run?
Well, I think the smart companies, the smart employers out there are going to have to rethink those contingent workers or the gig economy workers and to really embrace them, I would say, even as first-class citizens and start to look for ways and areas to create pathways into maybe full-time permanent employment or develop them as if they were full-time employees and really not and try to create as little barrier or friction to the gig worker to become an employee. Because I think that it's going to be a game of talent attraction, and gig workers are going to want to work for your company if they see that they're paid timely, if they see that you have a better culture than their other gigs that are available to them. And I do think as you invest more in them and have better programs than maybe your competition in developing, that you are going to start seeing some of those folks take longer term positions over time. But I do think that there's not a lot going on right now in that area. But I think the companies that succeed in the future have to rethink that to say, how do we embrace and engage those individuals as if they work for us and not treat them like second class citizens?
I guess if we can bridge that gap, do you have sort of I guess, how would you quantify or how would you sort of describe what you think your company or your clients are doing to really develop future leaders?
Well, I think, for us at Ceridian, we weren't always great at this. I would say we're getting better on our journey to this, but we clearly see the need for high potential leaders and emerging leaders, not only from a succession planning standpoint, but just to fill new roles as they grow in the organization, as the organization grows. And so we've started a mentoring program last year that we're really doubling down on this year, where every leader in the organization has the opportunity to sort of opt into a mentoring program and sort of take one or two other employees. Generally, we're encouraged to take people that don't work directly in our organization, because I would say that if you're doing that with your own, that's called doing your job. And I would say, look, we're trying to look beyond the walls of our individual departments and go get people in other departments and give them sort of a cross-pollination view of how we see leadership development and give them some different ideas on how to do that. And so we have a whole course for the mentors and the people being mentored that we're trying to do that organically, where everybody pitches in. It's not just the learning and development department's challenge to do that. it's everyone's challenge to do that to make our company a better place tomorrow than it is today. So those are some of the things that we're doing. Obviously, there's a lot of leadership development programs that we're familiar with, and we'll selectively use those in different areas, whether it's customer experience or whether it's sales leadership or things like that. But we're investing a ton of our resources in that because we see that is absolutely our future. Is our workforce that's going to grow to be great leaders.
Absolutely. Well, it seems like you've spent a lot of time thinking about this. You and your company certainly seem to have a handle on, as you mentioned, your journey, right? None of us are ever perfect, but it's that journey that I think is important. Is there a book you're reading right now that you might share with us or one that you typically suggest people check out?
Oh, my gosh. I'm New Year's resolutions. Here we are in January. I'm reading a lot. One of them is called Bet on Talent, How to Create a Remarkable Culture That Wins the Hearts of Customers. A lady named Deanne Turner wrote that. Patrick Lencioni wrote the foreword in that. I'm a big fan of Jeffrey Gittimer's Little Teal Book of Trust, How Do You Earn It, Grow It, and Keep It. And then a great manager classic just came out from Gallup. It's called It's the Manager, and it's talking about how the quality of managers and leaders is the single biggest factor in your organization's long-term success. And it's not just the chief leaders, it's really the entry-level first-line managers that are really the unsung heroes in every organization. So I'm gobbling up that and just kind of retuning my management and leadership game and trying to figure out how do I do better for my people this year. So yeah, I'm constantly feeding and looks like I'm going to be listening to more Talent Talk radio podcast because there's some really great material that you're producing out there as well, Chris.
Well, I appreciate it. And I want to make sure we let everyone know, how can they get a hold of you or find out more about Ceridian if they're interested in working with your company or working for your company or just learning more in general?
Yeah, it's super easy. It's just Ted, T-E-D, at Ceridian.com is the best way to reach me. And our website, Ceridian.com, is out there to find out everything there is to know about Ceridian, its products, its services, and how we're trying to make work life better for our employers and the people that work for them.
Well, fantastic. Ted, I really enjoy talking to you today and learning more about your organization and your insights on talent and culture. Hopefully we can have you back at some point and give us an update on all the awesome things that you're doing.
My pleasure, Chris. Thanks for having me.
All right. Hopefully everyone out there has gained something they can use in their own career in a positive way. Our next live show will be next week, January 21st. Our guests will be Canadian Aldine Simpson, a Chief HR Transformational Officer, and Jeff Blanton, author, keynote speaker, and podcaster. So until then, do what you love and show the world how talented you can be today.
You've been listening to Talent Talk Radio, brought to you by People G2.